Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is side one of For the Record program number 352, titled Forward into the Past, Part 2. This is a further development of the discussion on September 11th and the related events, and in particular, this is a follow-up to For the Record program number 333. That is titled Forward into the Past, Part 1. That was recorded on October 28th of 2001. Several names that you heard in that broadcast, several names that you've heard in a number of different programs will be familiar to listeners, and hopefully some of the things that they hear in this program will ring a bell. We're going to go directly to an article that appeared in the San Francisco Chronicle this past Tuesday. This past Tuesday was March 12th. Of the year 2002, almost 5 months after Forward into the Past, Part 1 was recorded. Names to remember: Ahmed Huber, a name discussed in many programs, For the Record 335, 336, 338, 340, 41, 42, 43, 44, 50, and 51. Remember Nada Management and Youssef Nada, also a name that we've discussed often. Remember the name NPD, actually the title of the German neo-Nazi party, arguably its most important advocate, Horst Mahler, along with the aforementioned Ahmed Huber, endorsed September 11th. In particular, pay attention to François Genoux. Now, François Genoux was a very important figure we've discussed in numerous broadcasts, accessing the material from the remarkable book Dreamer of the Day, Francis Parker Yockey and the Postwar Fascist International, that encyclopedic and vitally important book authored by Kevin Coogan. And as I've said in past programs, my use of Coogan's material should not be misunderstood as constituting an endorsement on Kevin's part for the working hypothesis that I presented on September 11th. Turning now to the San Francisco Chronicle of Tuesday, March 12th of 2002, on page A12 of the Peninsula edition of the Chronicle, we find the following article by Jay Bushinsky of the Chronicle Foreign Service. It's datelined Bern, Switzerland. It's headlined, Swiss Probe Anti-U.S. Neo-Nazi, subtitled, Suspected Financial Ties to Al-Qaeda. The article reads in part as follows. Listen for the names: Ahmed Huber, Youssef Nada, the title of the NPD, François Genoux, and listen to the connecting links. At the behest of President Bush, Swiss law authorities are investigating an alliance between Islamic militants and European neo-Nazis who have allegedly been providing financial support to Osama bin Laden's Al-Qaeda network. Experts say Islamic militants and far-right movements, a coalition they call the Third Position, share common hatreds, the United States and Jews. Quote, extremists manage to find ways to put aside their differences and find common cause, unquote, Rabbi Abraham Cooper of the Simon Wiesenthal Center said recently. The central figure in the probe is Ahmed Huber, H-U-B-E-R, a 74-year-old Swiss convert to Islam who says the, quote, Zionist Israel lobby controls the U.S. government and mass media and shapes U.S. policy, unquote. Nada Management, the Bern company Huber helps direct, has been singled out publicly by President Bush. Huber, a gregarious and outspoken former journalist who spent 3 decades covering the Swiss parliament for a socialist newspaper, is a strong supporter of Germany's neo-Nazi National Democratic Party, or NPD, as well as such extreme right politicians as France's Jean-Marie Le Pen. Huber serves on the board of directors of Nada Management, founded by a Swiss Nazi, note that, beginning again, founded by a Swiss Nazi and formerly known as Altaqua Bank. The consulting and management firm is part of the international Altaqua Group, which the United States believes has long acted as a financial advisor to Al-Qaeda. Quote, Altaqua is an association of offshore banks and financial management firms that have helped Al-Qaeda shift money around the world, unquote, Bush said on November 7th. The U.S. government has frozen Huber's assets and is pressuring the Swiss government to arrest him for his alleged role in the Al-Qaeda money network. Swiss investigators say Huber's travels on the Muslim lecture circuit in Western Europe and North America brought him into contact with bin Laden's followers. Huber has admitted to meeting with associates of the Saudi exile, describing them as, quote, discreet, well-educated, very intelligent people, unquote. But he denies that NADA management underwrites al-Qaeda activities. During an interview in his study, lined with books and portraits and photographs of Adolf Hitler, Richard Wagner, the Ayatollah Khomeini, Haj Amin al-Husseini, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, and Egypt's Gamal Abdel Nasser, Huber expressed his views to a Chronicle correspondent. Quote, "The U.S. is the ally of 1.5 million Jews against 1.3 billion Muslims. It is allied with 5 million Israelis against 200 million Arabs," unquote, he said, again quoting, "We will bring down the Israel lobby and change foreign policy. We'll do it in America. When it happens, you'll understand," unquote. Huber minimizes his role on NADA Management's board of directors, saying he is a minor player who receives only $1,500 annually in compensation. He says the company's sponsors are mostly wealthy Muslims from Malaysia and the Persian Gulf states who specialize in projects, quote, "beneficial to third world countries like new roads, clinics, and agricultural development," unquote. Contrasting what Huber had to say about NADA management with the analysis of someone else. But Hans-Jürg Mark Wiedmer, a spokesman for the Swiss Attorney General, disagrees. His office has been investigating NADA management's activities in Switzerland, Germany, and the United States for the past 6 months. Quote, "There have been indications that Al-Taqwa could have been financing Al-Qaeda," he said, again quoting, "Since September 11th, we have been seeking criminal connections. We had been on their trail before, but did not have enough evidence to open criminal proceedings. This has changed," unquote. Wiedmer says the data he has gathered have been made available to U.S. authorities, but he specified that if charges are eventually filed, the, quote, "culprits," unquote, will be tried in a Swiss court. Three other NADA management board members have also been questioned by Swiss, Italian, and U.S. authorities: Youssef Nada, an Egyptian expatriate who has Italian citizenship, Ali Himat, a Syrian national, and Mohamed Mansour, a Zurich resident. Nada lives in Campione d'Italia, a tiny Italian enclave and tax haven near the southern Swiss city of Lugano. 3 months ago, Campione police raided NADA management's local office and confiscated records and documents. Pay attention, too, to what you're about to hear. Listen to the reference to the Muslim Brotherhood. That's something we've spoken about at considerable length. In particular, it was the primary focus of For the Record 343, Mein Jihad, Part 2, and also For the Record 351, Mein Jihad, Part 3. Continuing. The NADA Management Board of Directors is assisted by a committee of Muslim scholars headed by Sheikh Youssef al-Qaradawi, an Egyptian linked to his country's outlawed Muslim Brotherhood. The committee's purpose is to make sure NADA conforms to Islamic doctrine, such as a ban on interest rates. Huber's longtime Swiss nemesis is Jean-Claude Burer, B-U-H-R-E-R, a correspondent for the prominent French daily Le Monde. Burer recently cited a column published in Morgenstern, a newspaper read by surviving former members of Germany's wartime Waffen-SS, in which Huber said Muslims and Nazis were involved in the same fight. Please note here that the analysis or the defense by Ahmed Huber that NADA management is simply a philanthropic organization has been taken issue with, to use bad English, not only by U.S. Intelligence and other countries' intelligence services, but also Hans-Jürg Mark Wiedmer, W-I-E-D-M-E-R, a spokesman for the Swiss Attorney General. In For the Record 335, we quoted a Washington Post article from September 18th, which mentioned that Swiss authorities are looking into NADA management's possible involvement in securities trading in the run-up to September 11th. Returning to the paragraph that I just read and resuming the narrative here, Huber's longtime Swiss nemesis is Jean-Claude Buret, a correspondent for the prominent French daily Le Monde. Buret recently cited a column published in Morgenstern, a newspaper read by surviving former members of Germany's wartime Waffen-SS, in which Huber said Muslims and Nazis were involved in the same fight. Quote, "This is tantamount to a marriage between the swastika and the Islamic crescent," unquote, wrote Buret. Buret also assailed Huber for denying the scope of the Nazi Holocaust and, listen carefully to the following, for being a faithful disciple of François Genoux, a Swiss lawyer who funded Hitler and served as a German agent during World War II. After the war, Genoux underwrote the clandestine Odessa organization, which, according to famed Nazi hunter Simon Wiesenthal, enabled such notorious Nazi fugitives as Adolf Eichmann, Alois Brunner, and Klaus Barbie to escape to South America and the Middle East. By the way, I would interrupt and note, of course, the Odessa is the famed and deadly post-World War II SS underground, headed up by former SS Obersturmbannführer Otto Skorzeny. That organization, in turn, inextricably linked with the Reinhard Gehlen spy outfit, and at an economic level with the remarkable and deadly Bormann organization. Alois Brunner was one of the top aides to Adolf Eichmann, and he was originally posted to Syria, where many people believe he still lives. He's obviously a very old man. He was originally posted to Syria as the head of the BND's Damascus desk. The BND is the German intelligence service, the ultimate successor, the ultimate manifestation, the ultimate incarnation, I should say, of the Reinhard Gehlen Nazi spy outfit. Now, remember François Genoux, an individual with, as I like to say, more connections than a switchboard, described here as a Swiss lawyer who funded Hitler and served as a German agent during World War II, as we have seen in our use of Kevin Coogan's remarkable text and in other discussions. François Genoux was also the heir to the literary works of Adolf Hitler, Martin Bormann, and Joseph Goebbels. By the way, as we've looked at in numerous programs, Ahmed Huber was a disciple also, in addition to François Genoux, of Johann von Leers, who was in charge of anti-Semitic propaganda for Goebbels' propaganda ministry. He later moved to Egypt and changed his name to Omar Amin von Leers and converted to Islam. Turning back to the article from March 12th of 2002 in the San Francisco Chronicle, this on page A12. Authorities believe Genoux founded Al-Taqwa Bank and allocated its resources to support international terrorists such as Vladimir Ilyich Ramirez, alias Carlos the Jackal, and Osama bin Laden. One more time, because note the source for this. It isn't Dave Emery. It isn't some weird A-blank-blank conspiracy publication. Authorities believe Genoux founded Al-Taqwa Bank. That's founded Al-Taqwa Bank that we've spoken about and allocated its resources to support international terrorists such as Vladimir Ilyich Ramirez, alias Carlos the Jackal, and Osama bin Laden. Genoux committed suicide in 1996, shortly after Jewish leaders and Swiss banking officials announced an unprecedented agreement to set up a commission to examine secret bank and government files to search for funds deposited in Switzerland by Holocaust victims, according to Buret. Over the years, Genoux paid French attorney Jacques Vergès to defend Ramirez and Klaus Barbie, and also covered the legal expenses of Eichmann before an Israeli court in 1961. He also subsidized Ayatollah Khomeini's prolonged exile in France when Iran was governed by Shah Mohammad Reza Pahlavi. Janu's admiration for Khomeini is shared by Huber. Quote, "He was a fantastic man," unquote, Huber said. Well, there is much to ruminate in this particular story. Moving back up from the very end, note that among other things, Janu apparently paid for the exile of Ayatollah Khomeini when he was in France, and Khomeini, of course, ultimately replaced the Shah. It was Khomeini's government that had become the focal point of the October surprise, in which the dealing, or what is generally conceptualized as the October surprise, in which the dealing between the Reagan-Bush campaign and the Islamic fundamentalists under Khomeini to hold hostages taken from the U.S. embassy, that deal prolonged their release until after Jimmy Carter's humiliation and consequent election defeat was assured. Note here that Janu apparently paid for Khomeini's exile in France. Recall in RFA 38, among other programs, we accessed the heroic work of Farah Mansour, a member of the Iranian resistance, who maintains that, in fact, the Iranian exiles were very deeply involved with and connected to those same elements of the U.S. power political elite that had put Khomeini in power in the first place, not just with holding the hostages. Janu's role in that entire affair is something to think about. Recall that in For the Record program number 341, we noted that Zacharias Moussaoui, now indicted as being the 20th hijacker in the September 11th incidents, is being represented in France by an attorney named Isabel Couton-Père, who is not only the attorney for Vladimir Ilyich Ramirez, alias Carlos the Jackal, a protege of François Janu, but she is going to marry Carlos the Jackal, and she also, Carlos the Jackal, I should say, was greatly assisted by François Janu after his arrest in Sudan in 1994. Now, again, people can stop and ask themselves why a woman would want to marry Carlos the Jackal. Is it for the money, the fame, or the hot sex? Carlos and the Jackal is going to be spending the rest of his life in prison. Also note that, as we discussed in For the Record program number 344, the aforementioned future Mrs. Carlos and the attorney who's representing Zacharias Moussaoui in France, Isabel Couton-Père, is a protege of Jacques Vergès, who in turn is a protege of François Janu, alleged by authorities to have founded Al-Taqwa Bank. Now notice also that Janu committed suicide in 1996, shortly after the affair of the Swiss banks and the Holocaust victims' accounts came under official investigation. Turning again to the Chronicle of 312-2002, Janu committed suicide in 1996, shortly after Jewish leaders and Swiss banking officials announced an unprecedented agreement to set up a commission to examine secret bank and government files to search for funds deposited in Switzerland by Holocaust victims, according to Bureau. Now, bearing in mind the fact that, as we discussed in For the Record program number 305, and as we repeated in For the Record program number 322, the affair of the Swiss banks and the investigation of the Holocaust-era accounts that have languished there, had that investigation been fully followed, would have gone to the remarkable and deadly Bormann organization. I've also discussed the fact that there are strong connections between Saudi bankers and the same Bormann Swiss banking milieu in 1996. Bear in mind that Saudi investors are heavily involved in Al-Taqwa. Turning now to a book that we've used many times in the past, this book is called Dollars for Terror, subtitled The United States and Islam. It was authored by Richard Labavière, translated by Martin Demare, published in softcover by Algora Publishing, ISBN number 1-892-941-06-6. Repeating an article, or an item, I should say, that we looked at in For the Record program number 344 and 345, the affair of the Nazi gold and the fact that the Swiss banks have recently been obliged to return funds to several Jewish associations have encouraged Gulf financiers to prefer the Swiss money market, according to several financial experts who confirm that Saudi capital plays a central role in Swiss banking circles. The publication of a confidential report from the Foreign Office on September 10, 1996, related to the deposits of Nazi gold in Switzerland, to the deposits of Nazi gold in Switzerland, estimated at the end of the war to be between $200 and $500 million, set off the powder keg and launched the affair known as the, quote, Jewish funds, unquote. And as we noted in the Chronicle article, it was at this time that Janu, quote, committed suicide, unquote. Continuing. Switzerland took on the commitment to restore several billion dollars to the World Jewish Congress. Quote, in return, this event has caused a sympathetic reaction among certain Arab financial milieu, especially Saudi, for the Swiss money market, unquote, the banker adds. Again quoting, but independently of this incident, Saudi funds are regarded as vital for the future of Swiss finance. Unquote. Note that the Saudi money go round and Gulf money go round and Arab money go round, replacing some of the funds that apparently had vanished from the Swiss banks. Now, we're going to turn to another article that appeared this past week. And again, this has been recorded on March 18th of 2002. This appeared in the San Jose Mercury News of Friday, March 15th of 2002. This is an article by Laurent Belsey, B-E-L-S-I-E, of the Christian Science Monitor. It's Dateline St. Louis and headlined, Domestic Terrorism Lurks as Growing and Potent Threat. And after discussing the fact that domestic terrorists are being focused on in the anthrax investigation and that they have been responsible for the vast bulk of terrorism in the United States, skipping down, we read, and at least one watchdog group says they may be forming links with Islamic extremists. Thus, federal authorities should not get so wrapped up in battling al-Qaeda that they miss threats closer to home, terrorism experts say, again quoting, if we're not careful, we could open up a little slice of heaven for these guys, unquote. California's new Homeland Security Chief George Vinson warned high-tech executives in December, again quoting, despite America's hardening attitude toward terrorism, two neo-Nazi leaders in the United States lauded the attack on the World Trade Center, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center, a hate group watchdog based in Montgomery, Alabama. By the way, we've taken a look at the National Alliance, the American sister organization of the NPD, and one of the organizations that Ahmed Huber is associated with. That was one of the groups that endorsed the September 11th attacks. We've looked at that in numerous broadcasts, including For the Record program number 348, Machiavelli 101. And speaking again of domestic terrorists, skipping down, we read, and there is evidence that they are forging links with terrorists from the Middle East, the center claims. White supremacists and Islamist extremists share the same agenda, says Stephen Gale, University of Pennsylvania professor who specializes in terrorism. Al-Qaeda wants to disable the United States so it cannot influence the Islamic world, while the U.S. groups hope to bring down the federal government and segregate the nation by race. One of the points that I've made in connection with the September 11th attacks is that, in effect, the United States is being attacked by a pincers movement of the underground Reich. This also is massively reinforced by a fifth column, currently, among other things, occupying 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And this pincers movement consists of both foreign and domestic terrorists, and they are allied with one another. There have been renewed indications of same, as discussed in that Mercury article. I'd like to close side one of For the Record 352 by repeating an item from the vitally important recent book, The Beast Reawakens, by Martin A. Lee. That was published in hardcover by Little Brown Books, copyright 1997. This is by way of review, and we're going to be taking a look at one of the cementing elements uniting the fascism of the pre-World War II and World War II period, including Haji Amin al-Husseini, a major in the Waffen-SS, and one of the people admired by Ahmed Huber, in whose picture he has on his wall, with American so-called neo-Nazis, I don't like the term neo, and Saudi Arabia. In turn, we're going to be taking a look once again at an organization called the World Muslim Congress that was founded by Haj Amin al-Husseini, associated with the former World Anti-Communist League, that was a principal element in the U.S. intelligence-backed effort against the Soviets in the Afghan War against the Soviet Union in 1980. And we're going to take a look, too. Bear in mind that both Osama bin Laden and the Arab Afghans, as well as Ramzi Youssef, were heavily involved in the anti-Soviet Afghan effort. That's where they got their genesis as warriors, and like the Galen organization, the Mujahideen turned out to be a Trojan horse. They doubled on and have attacked the United States. Note that Saudi Arabia was heavily involved in funding the World Muslim Congress. That is one of the things that cements the present, the deadly, very deadly present, with the lamentable past. Turning to Martin Lee's The Beast Reawakens. Speaking of the World Muslim Congress, based in Pakistan, the World Muslim Congress was initially headed by the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, who, like his friend, H. Keith Thompson, stood by the Third Reich until his death in 1974. A few years later, the World Muslim Congress, then headed by Pakistani Dr. Inamullah Khan, mailed Holocaust denial literature to every member of the U.S. Congress and the British Parliament. The WMC's official mouthpiece, Muslim World, carried ads for the Protocols of the Elders of Zion and Henry Ford's The International Jew. Skipping down. Dr. Khan also served as an advisor to the Saudi royal family, which lavished funds on the World Muslim Congress. In addition, the Saudi Arabian government retained the services of American neo-Nazi William Grimstead as a Washington lobbyist. And remember also the third position. Note that an American neo-Nazi was hired by the Saudis as a Washington lobbyist. Remember also the fascist third position. Like many European neo-fascist groups, the World Muslim Congress adopted a third-position stance during the war between the superpowers, as the contest between the superpowers, as demonstrated by this headline from Muslim World: U.S. and USSR both serve Zionist interests. But Khan tempered his anti-American tirades when the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan in 1979. Soon, the World Muslim Congress began working closely with U.S. intelligence and Pakistani military officials who were covertly supporting the Afghan Mujahideen in their fight against the Soviet-installed regime in Kabul. This effort was strongly endorsed by Dr. Khan, who served for many years as the Pakistani representative of the Nazi-infested World Anti-Communist League, which played an important role in the Reagan administration's secret war in the Golden Crescent. We're going to be continuing a line of discussion begun in Side 1. Key names to remember: Ahmed Huber, a Swiss-born Islamo-fascist and, quote, neo-unquote Nazi. Al-Taqwa, both names we've spoken about many times in the past. A name we've spoken about still more often in the past, that of François Genoux. The connections between these were explained at considerable length in the first half of this broadcast. I've talked about Huber and Al-Taqwa in, for the record, 335, 336, 338, 340, 41, 42, 43, 44, 50, and 51. We've spoken about Genoux in many programs, including A Forward Into the Past, Part 1, recorded on October 28th of 2001. That's For the Record 333. We came back to him in program number 341, 342, 343, 4, and in particular in number 350. So keep in mind these names. One of the points that I'm going to review from previous broadcasts concerns the line of heritage from the aforementioned François Genoux, a key operative on behalf of the Third Reich in its World War II and pre-World War II overground phases and the post-World War II underground phase. Bear in mind Genoux's sponsorship of Carlos the Jackal, including in particular after Carlos was arrested in Sudan in 1994. Bear in mind also that a Genoux protege, Jacques Vergès, who represented Klaus Barbie, Jacques Vergès had also represented Carlos the Jackal. So bear in mind the heritage from François Genoux to Carlos the Jackal and to Jacques Vergès. We're going to take a look now at who was representing Carlos Moussaoui, the so-called 20th hijacker in France. That is to say, who is his French counsel? Reviewing now from For the Record program number 341, LA Times, Thursday, December 13th of 2001, an article by David Zucchino, Dateline Narbonne, France. Quote, it's as if he had died, unquote, mother of suspects says. This refers to Zacharias Moussaoui. Skipping down, Zacharias Moussaoui is represented in France by Isabelle Couton-Père, who is well known for representing and later promising to marry Ilich Ramirez Sanchez, better known as Carlos the Jackal. Again, Carlos, a protege of, among others, François Genoux, and represented by, among others, Jacques Vergès, who also represented Klaus Barbie. Reviewing from For the Record 344, New York Times, Saturday, January 12th of 2002, Suzanne Daly wrote the following article. This is datelined Paris and headlined Bucking the Court Again to Marry the Jackal. It's about the aforementioned Isabelle Couton-Père, who is the French counsel, or a French counsel, for Zacharias Moussaoui. Speaking of Mrs. Couton-Père, the future Mrs. Carlos, but in 1981, she was taken under the wing of Jacques Vergès, a legendary defender of celebrity villains. Her methods have included the so-called rupture tactics Mr. Vergès became famous for, treating a trial like a political lynching, turning her back on judges, and sometimes walking out. She's going to be representing Zacharias Moussaoui, and she is one of the political heirs to the Genoux Vergès Carlos the Jackal Altaqua heritage. A very important article about Altaqua, about Ahmed Huber, about the connections between Altaqua and Osama bin Laden's milieu, that appeared in Newsweek magazine's issue of March 25th of 2002. This particular article is by Mark Hosenball, H-O-S-E-N-B-A-L-L. He was assisted by Kevin Perino, P-E-R-A-I-N-O, and Catherine Skip, S-K-I-P-P. The article is titled Terror's Cash Flow. It's subtitled, Is Altaqua a Shadowy Financial Network, a Secret Money Machine for Osama bin Laden? And some of the key names to remember here, and this supplements the March 12th article from the Chronicle. Of course, Ahmed Huber. François Genoux is not mentioned in this article, but note Altaqua, note a number of elements here. As we talked about in the March 12th Chronicle article, François Genoux helped pay for the Ayatollah Khomeini's exile in France, or he helped to finance Khomeini when he was in exile in France. In this article, we're going to talk about the fact that Huber was actually invited to appear at a gathering by the feet of the Ayatollah Khomeini. The admiration of Huber for Khomeini was discussed in past programs about Huber. Note that among the other recipients of Huber's wisdom, the Nation of Islam, an African-American Islamo-fascist organization, or what I would describe as an Islamo-fascist organization, they have, as I said, been among the recipients of the wisdom of Ahmed Huber. Note also connections between the Altaqua milieu and Sheikh Omar Abdel Rahman. We've talked about those in the past. And in particular, note indications here, as testified to on the floor of Congress, that Altaqua, in addition to helping finance bin Laden before September 11th, was allegedly involved in financing bin Laden after September 11th. The Nassau Bahamas branch of Altaqua, financed in part by six members of the bin Laden family, who, as we've seen in the past past programs, contrary to popular opinion and publicized opinion, they had not severed connections with Osama. Terror's Cash Flow by Mark Hosenball, with assistance from Mr. Perino and Ms. Skip, Newsweek 325, 2002. In neo-Nazi circles, 74-year-old Albert Huber is something of a celebrity. The retired Swiss journalist gives talks to far-right groups around the world, condemning Zionists and arguing that the Holocaust was exaggerated. Over the past two decades, he made regular trips to the United States, lecturing at Aryan Youth and Nation of Islam meetings. Huber's rants are especially popular among radical Muslims. Born a Christian, the blue-eyed, silver-haired Huber converted to Islam in the 1960s. He now calls himself Ahmad and preaches that neo-Nazis and Muslims should join ranks to defeat Israel. Quote, "The United States is now controlled by a small Jewish faction," unquote, he says, again quoting, "We are making a link between Islamic movements and the new right in Europe," unquote. The late Iranian dictator Ayatollah Khomeini was so impressed with Huber's theories that he was once invited to sit at his feet at a gathering in Tehran. Note, as we discussed in the first half of the program, Khomeini's stay in exile in France financed by François Genoux. Continuing. More recently, Huber says he has been approached at Islamic conferences by people introduced as representatives of Osama bin Laden. Garrulous and surprisingly friendly, Huber is unapologetic about the attention bin Laden's supporters give him. But despite his extreme beliefs, he described the September 11th attacks as, quote, "counter-terror against American-Israeli terror," unquote. He claims he has no personal ties to terrorists. International investigators think otherwise. Late last year, the United States put him on a list of people suspected of financing terrorism. Huber served on the board of Al-Taqwa, a shadowy financial network that they say hid money for bin Laden and other international terrorists and helped to fund their operations. Investigators on bin Laden's trail had known of Al-Taqwa's existence for years, but the group's maze-like structure made it hard to track, and the feds considered it a low priority. Not anymore. Within hours of the September 11th attacks, a senior official told Newsweek, President George W. Bush ordered his national security team to seize bin Laden's cash. Quote, "I want their money," the president demanded. "I want it now. I want to hurt them," unquote. In November, the Treasury Department froze the assets of Al-Taqwa, Huber, and most of the network's other leaders. Shortly thereafter, it went into liquidation. Taqwa officials strongly deny that they have any connection with terrorists, but after months of probing, the feds say they have evidence that Al-Taqwa provided support to bin Laden both before and after September 11th. A Newsweek investigation, including interviews with U.S. and European law enforcement agents and top Al-Taqwa officials, reveals how bin Laden's suspected bankers kept the cash flowing and how they managed to stay for so long beneath the radar. Al-Taqwa, which means fear of God, was launched in the late 1980s by leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood, a secret society devoted to the creation of a worldwide Islamic government. By the way, in among other programs, For the Record 343 and in number 351, we dealt with the overtly, explicitly fascist heritage of the Muslim Brotherhood. It's why I have referred to that organization and related elements as Islamo-fascist. Again, not to be misunderstood as characterizing Islam as fascist, but rather what we've been dealing with in connection with September 11th is a theocratic fascistic manifestation of Islam that has exerted a profound influence in the Muslim world. I think perhaps the fate of humanity will depend on the dissociation of the world's Muslims from that fascistic element within it, within Islam. Continuing, speaking of the Muslim Brotherhood. The Brotherhood wanted to create a financial institution in which devout Muslims could invest their money. It would operate under strict Islamic law, which prohibits banks from charging interest. But investigators believe that the convoluted structure of Al-Taqwa made it easy to use as a money laundering mechanism. Al-Taqwa had no offices. The entire operation consisted of four men working at computers in a small apartment in Lugano, Switzerland. Lugano, which sits near the Italian border, is a kind of Alpine Tijuana, well known as a haven for tax evaders as well as money launderers. By the way, it's also the financial epicenter for Heinrich Thyssen Bornemisza, the heir to one of the heirs to the Thyssen fortune and a primary operative of the Bormann organization. Al-Taqwa's founders made other suspicious moves, registering the network as an offshore bank in the Bahamas, where secrecy laws would protect transactions from prying investigators. Back in Switzerland, the Bahamian license allowed Taqwa bosses to open commercial, quote, correspondent, unquote, accounts with established European banks, paying the larger institutions fees to make cash transfers around the world for them without calling attention to themselves. All are classic money laundering techniques, investigators say. Intelligence sources say they weren't aware of Al-Taqwa's activities until the mid-1990s, when the Egyptians began investigating possible terrorist links to one of Taqwa's founders and shareholders, a wealthy Swiss resident named Ahmed Idris Nasreddin. Born in Eritrea, the 73-year-old Nasreddin claims to be a descendant of African royalty. In the early 1990s, he helped create and finance the Islamic Cultural Institute of Milan, a mosque located just over the Italian border from Lugano. European intelligence agencies had begun to suspect that the Cultural Institute was a recruiting and supply center for Al-Qaeda and other terror groups. By the way, I would note that Youssef Nada, the founder of Al-Taqwa, was, according to the book Dollars for Terror, a young employee not only of the Muslim Brotherhood, but also of the Abwehr, German military intelligence during World War II, that run by Admiral Wilhelm Canaris. I noted in rereading aloud this particular article that Mr. Nasreddin was born in Eritrea, and he's 73 years old. Eritrea was an Italian colony. It is part of what used to be Ethiopia, and it was Eritrea which served as the pretext for Mussolini's invasion of Ethiopia in the mid-1930s, and it served not only as the pretext for Mussolini's invasion of Ethiopia, but also as the geographical base. Raises some interesting questions about the possible heritage of Mr. Nasreddin. How far back do some of these fascist connections go? Continuing, note here that the Cultural Institute of the Islamic Cultural Institute of Milan, a mosque located just over the Italian border from Lugano, associated with Nasreddin, was also associated with the milieu of Sheikh Rahman. Continuing, the center's late imam, Anwar Shaban, was a follower of Omar Abdel Rahman, the blind Egyptian cleric, now in a U.S. prison for his role in plotting to blow up New York landmarks. Qaeda terrorists involved in both the 1998 U.S. embassy bombings in Africa and the failed Millennium bombing plot hung out at the Milan Center, law enforcement officials say. The U.S. Treasury Department describes the mosque as, quote, the main Al-Qaeda station house in Europe. It is used to facilitate the movement of weapons, men, and money across the world, unquote. Nasreddin could not be reached. His lawyer, P.F. Barchi, or Barchi, B-A-R-C-H-I, says that Egyptian Secret Service agents warned Nasreddin in the mid-1990s about possible terrorist, quote, problems, unquote, with the center. Al-Taqwa's longtime chairman, an Egyptian expatriate and Muslim Brotherhood member named Youssef Nada, told Newsweek that Nasreddin would never get involved with terrorists. Still, he says, he warned Nasreddin to, quote, be more cautious, unquote. Barchi says his client only made, quote, charity, unquote, donations to support the center's worshippers, paying rent and utilities, and that he has nothing to do with terrorism. Nasreddin's links to the Milan Center made investigators curious about the network's other potential ties to terrorists. By the late 1990s, intelligence agencies on both sides of the Atlantic were probing Al-Taqwa. When Swiss regulators began questioning its leaders, Al-Taqwa unsuccessfully attempted to placate them by appointing Huber, a Swiss native, to its Swiss board of directors. Investigators began to take a harder look at Al-Taqwa after the embassy bombings. Sources say U.S. intelligence tracked telephone contacts between Al-Taqwa and members of bin Laden's inner circle. Note here, by the way, the connections between Al-Taqwa, or the alleged connections here between Al-Taqwa and the U.S. embassy bombings in 1998. Time permitting, we're going to return briefly to that subject later in the program. Beginning again, investigators began to take a harder look at Al-Taqwa after the embassy bombings. Sources say U.S. intelligence tracked telephone contacts between Al-Taqwa and members of bin Laden's inner circle. Qaeda operatives would call Takbo representatives in the Bahamas as they moved around the world. Still, the network's complex structure made it difficult to prove how money changed hands, and the investigation stalled. Under U.S. pressure, the Bahamian government revoked Al-Taqwa's license last spring. Treasury officials say the network continued to do business anyway. I would add that was under the rubric of NADA management. Continuing. But after Bush's order to roll up Bin Laden's money network, European investigators swept in on Al-Taqwa, searching Huber's and NADA's homes and freezing their assets. Nasreddin's money was not frozen. The Swiss, ever protective of their renowned status as an anonymous banking haven, at first seemed reluctant to go after Al-Taqwa. But after a private meeting with Attorney General John Ashcroft in Washington earlier this month, Switzerland's chief prosecutor, Valentin Rorschacher, told Newsweek his government is now conducting a vigorous criminal investigation. U.S. officials have been much more blunt about their suspicions. Testifying before Congress in February, Jaime Zarate, a senior Treasury official, said Al-Taqwa's connections to terrorists go back at least 5 years. Zarate told lawmakers that the United States learned in 1997 that the Palestinian terrorist group Hamas had transferred $60 million into Al-Taqwa accounts. Zarate also testified that intelligence agencies have evidence that, quote, as of late September 2001, unquote, after the attacks, again quoting, Bin Laden and his Al-Qaeda organization received financial assistance from Al-Taqwa's chairman, unquote, though he gave no details about what the money might have been used for. Nasreddin, Huber, and Nada all deny laundering money and any involvement of any kind with terrorists, and prosecutors don't have enough evidence to make a criminal case against them. At least not yet. Prosecutors say they are now piecing together thousands of pages of documents seized in raids on the bank and its leaders, searching for a paper trail between the bankers and Bin Laden. Prosecutors concede that Al-Taqwa may have been just one of Al-Qaeda's many sources of clandestine funds. If so, closing its doors could be an important step in slowing Bin Laden's river of cash to just a trickle. By the way, again, note allegations that Al-Taqwa had been involved with financing Bin Laden after September 11th. Note also that the difference between being involved with terrorism, being an intelligence service knowing that, and being able to prove that in a court of law are two different things and not necessarily equivalent. That is one of the key counterintelligence and also civil rights issues, or it is on that axis, pun intended, but many of these issues turn. And please note the distinction between reality and provable legal reality. Research credit on the following and transcription credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience. This sharp-eared and sharp-eyed listener got this from NPR's All Things Considered on March 21st of 2002. That was a Thursday. You can hear this very important segment at the NPR website of www.npr.org. This is an interview by Leanne Hansen, H-A-N-S-E-N, with Larry Johnson, a former State Department and CIA counterterrorism official and now the CEO of Berg Associates. This is titled by NPR, Reemerging Terror Groups, and it deals with attacks allegedly conducted by both the Red Brigades and the Sendero Luminoso in Italy and Peru, respectively. Leanne Hansen. As we just heard, the leaders of the Shining Path and Tupac Amaru groups deny that they were behind last night's car bombing in Lima, but some U.S. officials today hinted they think the Shining Path probably was responsible, and President Bush indicated today that he believes that the group is on the upsurge. But the Shining Path was supposed to have been crushed a decade ago, and that's not the only guerrilla group that may be getting an encore. In Italy this week, the Red Brigades claimed responsibility for the murder of a key government advisor. The Red Brigades carried out a series of political assassinations in the 1970s and 80s, and then disappeared until apparently this week. Larry Johnson was the deputy director of the Office of Counterterrorism at the State Department. Before that, he worked for the CIA. He's now CEO of Berg Associates. He joins us now on the phone. Leanne Hansen. Mr. Johnson, what are we seeing here, do you think? First of all, with someone like Shining Path, is this a second generation? Larry Johnson. I'd be cautious jumping to the conclusion that Shining Path has somehow managed to regenerate themselves and emerge. I think we're going to have to look at some ties between the radical Islamic groups that are in Latin America and the radical right that's in Latin America as well. For starters, for Shining Path, they're bound by one common theme, that is to say, the Islamists and radical right, which is hatred of Jews, and we have to look at it in the context of this other conflict in terrorism that's underway in Afghanistan and the Philippines. Leanne Hansen. So in other words, it might be new people, old name, unquote. Larry Johnson. Well, actually, quote, old name, people that we've known in other circumstances who aren't using their true name, unquote. And I would say the same thing extends to the Red Brigades in Italy. That the communists of the world are now uniting again, unquote, I think is laughable. But one other player that we have over in the Middle East that has been a safe haven for groups, not only the Red Brigades, Red Army faction, and Japanese Red Army, Syria. And Syria is up to its elbows in the Bekaa Valley in its support for Hezbollah, which is conducting operations against Israel right now. Leanne Hansen. Can you give us an idea of the why, the rationale behind the people that are, you're saying, are behind Shining Path? I mean, why would people in the mountains of Peru hate Jews? Larry Johnson. Well, it's not the people in the mountains. I mean, I've had two experiences in the last 6 months, one involved with the Philippines, one involved with Argentina, people who do not know each other, and they both said the same thing to me, and I had independent evidence corroborating it. And it's this. That the groups that you would think that would not normally work together, such as neo-Nazis in the United States, with these radical Islamic extremists, that because, you know, the neo-Nazis idea of Aryan purity would somehow be, it doesn't seem consistent with people who are Semitic, albeit of Arab descent. Nonetheless, this hatred of Jews you find around the world, this pernicious blood libel, this notion that, you know, Jews steal the blood of children and make pastries, that came out last week in Saudi Arabia. I've had many educated Argentines sit down and try to discuss with me that the Protocols of the Elders of Zion was a map of what the Jews wanted to do to take over Argentina. This perception of Jewish control of the financial institutions of the media is really prevalent in many parts of the world. And you find people who are elites, particularly if you go into Peru, there are elements within the military forces, within the intelligence community, that have their own interest in opposing both U.S. presence there, as well as trying to shift the blame onto, say, Sendero Luminoso. So at this point, I would vote for caution before leaping to conclusions that it is Sendero, unquote, that it isn't Sendero, unquote. The one thing I am certain of, it's with the assistance of some group outside of Peru. This is not internal. This is not homegrown. Leanne Hansen, Larry Johnson, thanks a lot. Larry Johnson, sorry to cheer you up. Leanne Hansen closes. Larry Johnson was the deputy director of the Office of Counterterrorism at the State Department and with the CIA. Many elements in common here. First of all, Philippines and Argentina, I've noted in For the Record program number 328 and in 330 and 336. One of the common elements there, Manzar al-Qasar, and also the Oklahoma City bombing. Evidentiary tributaries running in the direction of Ramzi Youssef and allegedly Terry Nichols in the Philippines. Also to Manzar al-Qasar, the AMIA and Israeli embassy bombings in Argentina. Manzar al-Qasar, in turn, running back to Syria. One of bin Laden's wives associated with the Alawite sect that runs Syria to a large extent and runs the Syrian intelligence services. Another element in common, Red Brigades, founded in part by Licio Gelli, head of the P2 Lodge, and Stefano Della Chiai, one of the authors of The Strategy of Tension. He was associated with the P2 and with the Red Brigades. He also, as we looked at in RFA 19, was associated with Sendero Luminoso, as well as a member of Klaus Barbie's Fiancés of Death paramilitary Nazi organization in Bolivia. Also, please note Silvio Berlusconi, a member of the P2. There are links between the Gulf Office and Operation Clean Hands and Al-Taqwa and Silvio Berlusconi and Yosef Nada and many of the elements that we've discussed. That's in For the Record program 351. There are other links as well, but in order to flesh those out, you're going to want to consult with the various web addresses that are available. And please note that both audio files and printed descriptions of these programs are to be distributed by people who are online. Please do everything you can to distribute both types of files as far and wide as possible. The programs I've recorded over the years are available from a CD and tape duplication service called Spitfire, one word, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E. They can be reached at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. Email mail at spitfirelist1word.com. Visit their website at www.spitfirelist.com. By the time you hear this program, there will be a detailed annotated description of the program in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com. Be sure to follow the links in that description to two websites maintained by sister station WFMU-FM, which have virtually the entire For the Record series available for download and or streaming on Real Audio. The first airing of each For the Record program takes place at 9 p.m. on Monday night on KKUP. Visit their website for instructions on how to listen at www.kkup.com. This concludes For the Record program number 352, Side B, Forward into the Past, Part 2, being recorded on March 24th of the year 2002. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.